What we're talking about is late night, early morning, low clouds. With a chance of fall, chance of showers in the afternoon. With variable high cloudiness, gusty winds at times around that corner of Sunset and Alvarado. Yeah, I know, things are tough all over. When the thunderstorms start increasing over the southeast and south central portions of my apartment, I get upset. And a line of thunderstorms was developing in the early morning hours ahead of a slow-moving cold front. Cold blood. With tornado watches issued shortly before noon Sunday for the areas including the western region of my mental health. And the northern portion of my ability to deal rationally with my disconcerting, precarious emotional situation. Cold out there. Colder than a ticket taker smile at the Ivor Theater on Saturday night. Flash flood watches cover the southern portion of my disposition. Yeah. There was no severe weather well into the afternoon. Kind of a low gust wind.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome, welcome, welcome back to the second installment here of the French Connections Friday edition. Today is the 17th of February, 2006. My name is Daryl Bradford Smith, as you know, and we are pleased and proud to have my invitee here. Her name is Lady Michelle Renouf, and she is from Great Britain, someone who has over the last few years begun to speak out quite forcefully on some of these free speech issues and many other things. Of course, not winning a lot of friends within the Blair government and the establishment in Britain, but certainly winning friends among people who care about our future. And she has been in contact and will be visiting David Irving. And if you don't know who David Irving is, you should, firstly. But more importantly, he is a historian. And before he became embroiled in this recent, witch hunt that he's involved in over in Austria, his career brought him some accolades as being one of the best historical researchers in Britain until he started touching on the issues of the Holocaust and other things. And as a result, this man's free speech rights have turned into criminal actions by we're going to get into it in a minute, by a lot of people. But anyway, Michelle, are you with me?
Yes, I am. How do you do, ladies and gentlemen?
Well, it's great to have you with me.
Very good wishes from London.
Well, you know, we have a lot of friends in London, and, Mohammed and David have both done this show and both brought a great deal of information to this broadcast. What I'd like to talk to you about today are these free speech issues and how, David Irving's plight in Austria should turn everybody into a patriot. I mean, look, if we can't speak our minds freely in this world, we've got nothing, and we're already descended into tyranny. Could you give everybody an overview of what David's all about and how he ended up in this terrible situation?
Well, just to read what I put on the update I put on his website, which is www.fpp.co.uk. Mr. Irving remains incarcerated in a Viennese prison pending trial on February the 20th, that's next Monday, for offences, in inverted commas, of a kind unknown to British, to English law, or to truly democratic countries. That is the essence, really. And that he is actually incarcerated under a totalitarian law, frankly.
Well, what are they claiming? What are they claiming he has done wrong in indictment?
Well, he actually, 16 years ago, they are claiming that 16 years ago, when he gave a lecture, mind you, to a university fraternity, he spoke about his skepticism, which is, of course, the basis, by the way, of all of our Western culture, is Hellenic skepticism and democracy, the right to speak, and the right to, as I often say, that it mocks our war dead, that in fact they believed that they fought and died in two world wars for our right of freedom of speech and open historical inquiry and expression. That is the basis of our culture. This is now being eroded, as you quite rightly referred to, by this totalitarian law by which it is now possible in 10 countries to be incarcerated for up to 20 years for what amounts to an illegal opinion. It's an outrage.
It's a thought crime.
I mean, Lewis Carroll, who wrote Alice in Wonderland, would take, I think he himself would be astonished at how this has come about, this what I'd call this extraordinary Jewish narrative thrall supremacism. It's a big, bit of a mouthful, but you know, that is really what it amounts to. This winning of the narrative in the absence of being able to have a proper democratic right to know both sides of an historical account and to judge what seems to be simple prejudice and special interests and what is obviously facts or fabrications in history. We must have this.
Yeah, we must. And here's the interesting thing: it regardless of what subject in history we're discussing, whether it be the Longshanks history, Edward I, or whether it be Cornwallis, or whether it be Abraham Lincoln, or the events in World War II, all of these things, by any democratic standard, need to have the freedom of examination. And of course, history is a malleable condition. I mean, history is never set. We constantly have to revise based upon our archaeology, based upon our discovery. And the fact is that this man's attempt to bring new information out to a group of people was seen as a crime rather than as a historical or an archaeological or a socio-archaeological event, and that by its very description is despotic and totalitarianistic, I think.
Yes, indeed, and it is actually preventing us from treating history as history, as opposed to a religion by which it has tenets that one may not challenge, which actually has become the case now in what is termed Holocaustianity. Because you cannot actually, now we've had our Cardinal O'Connor, who's the Archbishop of Westminster, outrage me, at least, in saying that the day before the International Holocaust Day that we had recently, that it is a sacrilege for anyone to challenge any part of that Hollywood interpretation of the war crimes of World War II. And he has said that that is a sacrilege. Well, of course, Christianity used to regard what happened on Calvary as the greatest evil and the greatest sacrilege to condemn. Now, it is the Holy of Holies, as Van Pelt, the defense historian at the Irving trial, said that Auschwitz is. It is now the Holy of Holies, and one must never query any aspect of that narrative.
Well,
this is
thing.
An outrage, really.
It is, Michelle, and it's so Orwellian, it's frightening. And here's the thing. I don't know facts about this, but if I wanted to have a debate, an intelligent and factual debate on any subject, including this one, I should be able to do that by virtue of my citizenship as an American or as a Brit or even as an Austrian. And,
indeed. Well, yes. I mean, we had a demonstration here calling for, in front of the Austrian and the German embassies, to free Austria and to free David Irving and to free these 10 countries in all that have this ban on revisionism. It bans the historians' purpose as an illegal act. I shall tell you the 10 countries so that you know that I'm speaking fact.
Okay.
It is Austria, Belgium, the Czech Republic, France, Germany, Israel, Lithuania, Poland, Slovakia, and Switzerland. Now, these are the 10 countries that very recently, in November last year, there was a unanimous vote, but without an actual vote, the representatives of 191 nations at the UN voted. Well, they didn't vote, they just let be adopt an Israeli-drafted resolution proclaiming January the 27th as the International Day of Commemoration in the Memory of the Victims of the Holocaust.
Well, would that include the homosexuals that were murdered and the...
No, this is the most important part of this is that, moreover, the resolution, and I'm quoting it now, rejects any denial of the Holocaust as an historical event, either in whole or in part, end quote. That means that anyone who wants to say, well, isn't it a matter of maths, that when the Pope went to Auschwitz and laid the plaques for so-called 4 million who were supposed to have died there, and then later on the 4 million plaque has been removed and now a 1 million plaque has been put there, doesn't that alter the 6 million figure? Now that is regarded as Holocaust denial. That kind of statement, or yet another one, where everyone on both sides of this debate accept that no Jews were made into soap during World War II. That is a propaganda lie. Everybody accepts that. Deborah Lipstadt, who was the professor who David Irving challenged in his libel action, who called him a Holocaust denier, she says, well, we accept that, but we leave it on the record because it's useful. Now, these kind of things are regarded under the heading of so-called Holocaust denial, which is like the term anti-Semitism. It is a sort of smear word that is intended to mislead people and to cause them to think that anyone who's speaking is being unreasonable.
That's right, and it's called political correctness in the parlance of the United States. And what we've got here, we discussed with Mohammed Rafik and with David Petcock last night regarding the history of the 13th tribe and the Khazars, and the fact that many of this population were not even Semitic. And the fact is that the majority of the Jews of today are descendants from a Khazarian group of peoples. And in fact, don't have Semitic blood even within themselves. So the truth is that when you call someone anti-Semitic, you're not even calling them anti-Semitic for being, counter to an Semite. I mean, the fact is also that half of the Islamic world are descendants from a Semitic background. But see, what's happened here is they've turned logic on its ear and completely changed any rational approach to any of these subjects, and there's a reason for it. There's a reason. Now, I don't know. See, I'm going to tell you something. I have not personally looked into the Holocaust. I don't know the facts around it, and I don't want to debate them here today. What's the most important thing is here is when someone tries to stop an investigation into truth and facts, there's a reason they do it. And the fact I understand, and throughout my life, the reasons they do it is they've got something to hide. Now, what in the world are they hiding? Well, that's something that the historians need to investigate, not be frightened away from, ladies and gentlemen. And, Michelle, I got to tell you something. It's a very brave thing you're doing here. Now, David's condition over there, the actual crime that they're going to try and convict him on, is it written Holocaust denial, or is it written some other way?
I believe it's called Holocaust denial. It is actually called, the German word is V-E-R-B-O-T-S-G-E-S-E-T-Z. Now, I'm not a German speaker, but I think that's he's being charged under Section 3G of this particular term, and it's Austria's equivalent of Germany's law for the suppression of free speech. That's what it amounts to.
Well, you know,
this unique law provides for sentences of 1 to 20 years, and Mr. Irving is being accused of having expressed an illegal opinion during two lectures in Austria in November 1989, 16, as you rightly said, 16 years ago.
Yeah.
And he has visited Austria on more than one occasion since, and that he does say that any sentence that's handed down by the court, he will immediately appeal to the European Court of Human Rights. Because this, the reason he's there, frankly, is because he wishes to draw attention to this outrageous law. He has a sort of clout. In fact, his opponent, Deborah Lipstadt, has actually suggested that he is released because she prefers him to be out of the radar of the public view and the public attention, as you rightly say, for some reason that doesn't seem to make any rational sense. Instead of wanting to explain to us the truths of this war crime, and no one says it wasn't a war crime, what we want to know, what are the facts? And instead of actually wishing to address this and prove it, the usual thing is to debate it in a way in which you simply attack and smear the other person.
That's right.
And this is what I would wish for the public and our listeners to realize and appreciate as a sort of household phrase, this demonize, isolate, and criminalize. That is the process by which anyone like me or anybody else who wishes to state and behave normally toward historical events and to find out the fact and what was the provocation, who is the culprit, who is the victim, what is the propaganda as opposed to the facts. These normal, usual things are in this particular subject smears.
Yes.
And I'd say that the term anti-Semitism itself, you see, I am a lifelong actress in television commercials, so I look at these things from an advertising point of view. How is it being packaged and what are we being sold? And frankly, are we being sold something in our best interests? That is what my career has taught me. Now, I look at this anti-Semitism, this very term, as a propaganda term intending to give a sort of genetic idea, coming back to your term about the Khazars and so on, a genetic idea to something that's actually theological.
That's right.
And it's an attempt to make something genetic, which actually causes people to fear that they are attacking an entire race of people, whereas in fact they're quite often attacking a concept, a very different thing.
Well, you
and
know,
we are now taught that we cannot criticize any Jew or criticize anything to do with their activities, be it bad or good, because it must be that we risk putting them in a gas oven or something.
Well,
now, this sort of nonsense has got to stop, and we must be able to speak in a rational way about historical events.
Well, let me tell you something, Michelle. I have actually called on my program for the declaration of Israel as an enemy state and that America declare war on them, and that they be invaded by the American troops. And this
the easiest thing to do would be to expose, this would be the best thing that could be to be done, is to expose to the American taxpayers that their dollars that they work hard for and that they're being robbed of are actually being sent elsewhere. They're being sent to Israel, for example, to pay off Jewish settlers, which of course are the criminal people who have actually occupied the correct and truthful owners of Palestine, the indigenous population. They are paying these people extraordinary sums in order to compensate them, as it were, for having to leave Gaza and return the properties of the rights to the rightful owner, the Palestinian Arabs, after they have reduced their homes to rubble, uprooted all of their trees and ruined their culture, and the taxpayers of America unknowingly are having their dollars wasted on this outrageous criminality. And this is what is important for our listeners to know.
Well, even worse than that, Michelle, I'm going to give you a small history thing. You probably know some of it. The USS Liberty was actually attacked repeatedly by the Israelis. The Levant affair in Egypt was also an attempt of the Israelis to bring America into a war. So they tried to kill Americans in Egypt. And 9/11, as we have been able to glean, was a Mossad operation, and they murdered 3,000 of our countrymen, including some Brits and some from around the world.
Well, let me tell you, Darrell, that I have been making a documentary because I came across these these British servicemen who were veterans of Palestine 1945 to 48, who tell me a very different picture to the film that we always had from Hollywood called The Exodus.
Yeah.
Now, it's very important for us to see and even give credit where credit is due. Let us credit Israel with being the first people to bomb a historic big landmark, dress as Arabs in the doing of it, leave a little Arab evidence behind. What does that remind you of?
Mm-hmm.
They are also people who were the first letter bombers, who set a letter bomb. The man who was given a Nobel Peace Prize was actually the first letter bomber who sent a bomb to this country and blew up the younger brother of Major Farron. Also, Golda Meir was the first air pirate who actually blew up that civilian plane of these Syrians. And of course, they started the first weapons of mass destruction amassing in Israel in the 1940s. So these are people who have actually, by their ill intentions, and I have to say they had these ill intentions from the end of the 19th century when Hitler was 8. So the Holocaust and all of that kind of narrative has nothing whatsoever to do with what has been happening in Palestine for the last 100 years.
Well,
the First World Zionist Congress stated this.
It's not
so
just
it's an ill-intentioned idea.
It's not just Palestine. These folks
no, indeed, it's a much greater Israel, and
well,
we see this now with the Iranian
situation. It actually goes back much further than the 19th century. Let's really discuss this for a moment. They were responsible for the implosion of the French monarchy under the Jacobins. They were responsible for Cornwallis's attempts at destroying and success at destroying Britain. They were involved in the implosion of Russia under the guise of communism. We know that these people are criminals beyond any measure.
Well, we do have it certainly from the horse's mouth in the shape of Chaim Weizmann, who was very much responsible for the Balfour Declaration. And he was the one who said, and I'm quoting him, he says, "We are the Trojan horses within the nations." Now,
that's right.
I can only quote what they say themselves.
Well, here, Benjamin Friedman gave his first-person account.
Yeah, very heroic Jewish gentleman.
And
a man I respect enormously for his ability to speak out like so many that I can name.
Yes, well,
very honorable Jews who call themselves ex-Jews quite often.
Well, here's the interesting thing. Ben Friedman's download is on my site, and it has received 16,000 people listen to it. And
yes, I've quoted him a lot in my own documentaries. He's a very able and very witty man as well.
Well, what we're going to do here, since we know the basics of this story now, Michelle, I would like to ask you right now that sometime when you return, you could give us the results of your visit so that the listeners have these two files, the one we do today and the one that when you return, to have David Irving's information spread as far afield as we can get it, because I believe all press and all information is going to make a difference in this case. But not only the
that is the purpose of the case. That is the purpose of the case, Darrell, to actually allow people to understand and know about this almost secret law that's been passed. As I say, it was drafted by Israel, and it was adopted without anyone having to vote. We need these things to be out in the open and expressed and examined frankly.
That's
and that
you,
is
I,
the purpose
I agree.
Of this.
They, you know, they did this. You know what they did in France? They had this man named Jean-Marie Le Pen. Now, Mr. Le Pen is he's an odious character. I've got to tell you.
Why?
Because of the things he says about Arabs and he's just a general racist across the board. But what they've done with him is they have co-opted his message to turn everybody into anybody who speaks about Jewish issues. Looking like they're going to be blamed as being a Le Pen. And so, of course, when you get these kinds of people serving up these simple...
I think one has to be very, very careful here, Darrell, because our enemy very much likes to condemn each one of us that ever stands up and says anything. They like to mischaracterize us and to demonize us and isolate us and criminalize us. Now, Le Pen is an example. So is David Duke. So is David Irving. So are many of these very heroic people. We see the same with the Iranian president.
Well,
now, we must be very careful of the demonizing, because what is said is not necessary. They very, very rarely quote what the actual person says. They
just take up
a view and then they express it. And it's not necessarily at all what the actual person
says.
Well,
I've actually seen him say it in a speech right in front of me. But here's the thing, what I believe.
Well, he would say that in French. Is your French very good?
Je parle français très, très bien, en fait. 100%. Est-ce que vous parlez français?
Afraid not.
Okay. Well, yes, I speak fluent French. Now, here's the interesting thing, Michelle. I think he's working for them. I think he's there as a foil to set this whole thing up, and that's my feeling about this man, Le Pen. I believe he is there to throw a hot poker into the French political system, and so that they can demonize.
I think that we must be very, very wary of these ideas, because I think we can say that far more carefully and far more exactly about this cartoon incident with the Danes. Now, we do know from their own, I like to quote the Jewish supremacists themselves. Now, they have said, when Theodor Herzl, who was the founder of Zionism, said he could not buy the Palestine from the last Sultan, he said, okay, now we will generate the jealousies among the empires, and we will play them off, and by proxy, we will get them to fight what we need for, and we will get what we want. Now, the Malaysian Prime Minister, the ex-Prime Minister, said it very clearly, and we are seeing now the Iranian President saying it very clearly, that what is happening now with this generating of hatred toward the Islamists is deliberately going to cause the West to be persuaded in the usual turn-speak kind of a way to find the Islamists, the victim, the culprits, instead of the victims, to generate the fear in the West, which will then support Bush and his dreadful Zionists and his dreadful Christian Zionists to attack Iran. Now, that is the usual trick, and we must be very aware of this particular way of doing things.
Well,
there's another term that I would like our listeners to become very familiar with and to make a household name, and that is turn speak or twist speak or trick speak. And that is the cynical inverting or distorting of facts so that, for example, the victim is made to appear the culprit. Now,
yes.
The state of the art of this, and the reverse, the state of the art of this is Israel, where for 100 years they have been claiming that the Palestinians are the culprits, whereas in fact from the very outset Zionism was ill-intentioned, never had any moral high ground, and it intended to disappear, that was the word, to disappear the entire Palestinian population and to do many other things that are the Zionist propaganda.
I agree
and
with
attention.
That. But I want you to understand that these people are very sophisticated, and they have throughout America and Europe planted people who promote hate against Jews so that they can stir up anti-Semitic incidents. In fact, they've been found to be behind skinheads. They have been found to be...
Well, yes, we certainly do see that they're very often a renter mob. We've experienced this renter mob concept.
Well, worse than that, what they've done, been able to do, is actually start movements in the United States where actual Jews were called crypto Jews, what we've described as crypto Jews, changing their birth names and then becoming anti-Semitic, and then having these people say, look, see all the hatred against Jews. And this is a...
Well, of course, there's acting in a Jewish way, and there's also acting, being Jewish, acting as if a Jew. And that is why I say that the term anti-Semitism is a propaganda term, because to behave in this Jewish supremacist way, which is an ill-intentioned idea toward the rest of the world, one doesn't have to be genetically Jewish. One just has to have the attitude, because I believe this is an attitude, it's a mimetic idea, something you mind, something you behave like, not something you're born to be.
Well, but
and I think there are many people who behave Jewish.
Yes,
and
but
this is like these Jewish Zionists. You know?
What I'm trying to point out here is that they are very sophisticated, and David and I would discuss this last night as well. They're very sophisticated in the way that they can get into a society and foment the kinds of discord and enmity toward other groups and each other.
Well, we've seen this with the Scofield Bible, which is actually the basis of this Christian Zionism evangelical movement.
Exactly.
Which is totally oxymoronic and totally against, it's absolutely counter to its own goals of being, Christianity is totally opposed to Zionism. In its role model of the Christ.
Well,
the role model is totally opposed to this brood of vipers and this pernicious and perfidious behavior.
Well, you know, and one of the other people that I had on recently was Reverend Ted Pike, and Ted is a scholar on all religions, and in fact, we know from time immemorial, from back as far as the Pharisees, that they have used these same strategies to manipulate entire societies. Now, they're not doing anything off of their playbook. They're working right off of the playbook, but they're using a great wealth built up over the generations through the hands of Warburg and Rothschild and Goldman and you can go down the list in Rockefeller and others, and they are pushing this agenda forward with powerful investment and very, very well organized deception. And so we need to be very aware that these people are extremely sophisticated in the way they assault us, and that they're very successful based upon their control of the media. And, you know, one of the things that I want to do, because we are the alternative to their...
Well, I would describe it as actually succeeding in capturing the narrative supremacy, the thrall. That this is the problem, that and what happened with the two prophets, Christ and Muhammad, is that they came actually to warn us against this particular style of deceit. They both speak of it. They both came to warn us. And this is the most important thing, because we know that in the case of Christianity, because of the Scofield Bible and because of the Vatican II, these warnings have been taken out and have been subverted.
Yeah.
And you know, when you look at these things, you always have to see who is the beneficiary. Sometimes when you want to find the culprit, you look for the beneficiary.
That's
that is
right.
The norm in an investigation. Mm-hmm. And the beneficiary in both of those cases have made the Christians, believers, into pro-Zionists. Now this is, and pro-Judaists. I have this direct experience myself with the Jesuits, because I was doing a postgraduate course, an MA in psychology of religion, only a few years ago, at the Heathrop College, which is the old Jesuit college and part of the University of London. Now, I was shocked to see that the principal of that college would go to Reform synagogues in St. John's Wood, which is where I saw this incident, where he would speak to the Jewish congregation and tell them that the two covenants stand. Now, the two covenants cannot stand unless you see Christianity in terms of a T-shirt that I happen to have, which and its logo reads, "Jesus loves you, but I'm his favorite." Now that is really a witticism which actually would indicate very clearly how Christianity would be viewed as this two-tier system, which is totally opposed to the idea of Christianity, where you're going to seduce Jews into supporting or joining Christianity, providing they can have a special tier system. Now, this is undermining the very idea of a God that does not favor any of his children, but favors all of his children, as would be the best father role model.
Mm-hmm.
You wouldn't want to have a religion based upon the worst bad father role model of a father, like a godfather, who would favor one of his children, because what that would do, as we know in reality, it would increase the natural narcissism of a child to an unreasonable state, making him less able to empathize with other people because of his narcissism and his concentration of himself. And though it, of course, would make him highly motivated to prove himself to be favored, and it would, in the consequence of the siblings of his brothers and sisters, make them feel demoralized because they are, for no reason, disfavored, and it would also create a potential sibling rivalry. So that this bad role model, which is the very basis of the idea of Yahweh as this father who chooses one of his children for no reason, this kind of role model is the worst possible. And as a consequence, we do have this New Testament model, which comes along and has a son who favors all of his. He gathers all of the children together. Now, these two concepts are opposed to each other. They cannot sit in hand in hand.
Well, I agree with you. And you know what we're going to end up doing here. When you return, are you there for the full trial, or what is the date structure for this event?
The trial begins at 9 o'clock on Monday morning,
yep.
And it will be before three judges, three professional judges, and an 8-man jury.
Do you know the judges who they are?
I don't know as yet, but we will see potentially that it may run over to the second day on the 21st. I have no idea, as no one has, with these matters, but I will certainly be there. And, of course, Mr. Irving has asked me to be his, whilst he's during his incarceration, acting as his media contact. But that, I must stress, is very different to being a spokesman. I'm not his spokesman. He's an entirely independent person. I wouldn't dream of expressing any view off the cuff that was not asked of me to express.
Mm-hmm.
But I will, of course, be very, very pleased to tell you my impressions, because I did sit through the 2 months of his libel action in 2000 when he was when he took this Professor Lipstadt to court. In fact, why I talk about this propaganda terms of Holocaust denial and anti-Semitism, but because I didn't know of David Irving in 2000. I had never taken any interest, particularly in World War II or its war crimes or anything else. I'd seen the Hollywood versions like everybody else and accepted them. But he had asked a question that I thought was very, very valid. He had said that if he were a Jew now, he wouldn't be asking who pulled the trigger, but why. Now, this why is very important, because a Holocaust is the term which Jewish supremacists have chosen to describe these war crimes, and no one says they weren't war crimes, including Irving and everybody, all the revisionists accept that they were war crimes. But this thing that it interests me about this is that Holocaust means a sacrificial burnt offering. It's a biblical term. Now, if there was such a thing as a sacrificial burnt offering of 6 million, which again is a very significant theological figure for Judaism, who made the offering? Now, in my research, I have found that there are many Zionists who made this offering. This is the interesting part for me.
Yeah.
But nevertheless, I went along to this high court because I thought this is asking the right question. But I have to say, I didn't expect a sensible person, because they had described him as a Holocaust denier. And to me, as it does to many people, I imagine, Holocaust denial suggests that you don't think anything bad happened to the Jews during World War II. Now, there's no one, as I say, that I know of who suggests that any such a thing. So I was expecting something, frankly, the opposite of what I found when I got there. I found on Irving's side of the courtroom a solitary person representing himself, backed up by enormous forensic research and a tremendously capable debate based on substance and fact. But on the other side of the courtroom, I saw 21 to 25 people with their laptops connected to, it seems, the Israeli government, backed and sponsored by Spielberg and Brofman and all these very wealthy people who are very much promoters of the Jewish narrative, on the other side. And instead of what I expected to be the reverse, with them giving all of this hard fact and sensible objective of debate, I found that all they were offering was smears and insults to Irving personally, which I've come to see is a typical way of their debate. They actually send you off on a red herring of another argument altogether, and the truth and the actual topic in hand goes kind of slithering away.
Yeah.
Rather like they said of Irving, but it's actually in the reverse.
Yeah.
They said that trying to debate with Irving is trying to nail jelly to a wall. Well, actually, to be frank, I have found it, and I was astonished, I have to say, to find that the opposite was the truth.
Yeah.
That this is the typical way that you get a response. Instead of getting someone to actually exhume those bodies that we see in those big trenches, those skeletons that you see, the wartime skeletons, which are said to have been people who have been gassed, millions of them, the obvious thing to do would be to exhume and forensically examine how they were killed. Did they die of typhus epidemic, which was rife in those internment camps during the war, or did they die from poisonous gas, the Zyklon B? That would be the one would suppose the normal way to deal with what they call Holocaust denial. But instead of which, all I saw in that courtroom for 2 months was this extraordinarily subjective argument, as if we were talking of a religion, what actually they'd call the Holy of Holies, as opposed to a sensible investigation. As I said to the Jewish Chronicle, who saw me there for 2 months and asked me what I felt about the judgment, and I said, frankly, I feel very dissatisfied by the judgment, because there were so many leads that Irving brought up, which the judge would say, these are sensitive areas, Mr. Irving. We will not go down them.
Was that judge from the Jewish community?
Not that I know of, but the point of the thing is that we have all been trained by this extraordinary success of this narrative, this Hollywood narrative of the war, of World War II and its war crimes, that we all feel that we are being disrespectful if we actually raise some issues about soap and the lampshades and all these things that have now been proved to be totally propagandist. So I said that to me it's rather like, say a parent who lose a child who's been killed, who's been murdered. Now, they may not wish to hear the facts.
Yeah.
Or the investigation, because it's unpleasant to hear these things. But you cannot stop justice and forensic inquiry because it's too sensitive in your terms. If you find it too insensitive, you simply don't go to the court, or you don't watch the or don't read the reports. But you cannot put a veto on history and a normal investigation into what is a crime and what is not a crime by saying, no, no, our sensibilities must be the highest and most important central here.
Yes.
So, you know, this is what I don't understand. If I say to you that only four of your children died instead of eight, I wouldn't expect you to smack me in the face and call me an anti-Semite. I would expect you to say, please prove it. Please prove it. That
well,
would be a normal reaction.
Well, it is. It would be. But, of course, any press that comes out of this is going to spin it in the opposite direction, as you well know. So it's going to be left up to you and I and to and others like us to get their true story out into the public. And I'm hoping that we can do that next visit. I'll schedule something for late next week with you if you have time. I'll get in touch with you when you return. And maybe we can have another visit and hopefully pronounce some good news for David and let the facts be shown.
Good news not only for David personally, because I'm a family friend,
but
for all of us, including all of your very patient listeners to my long expositions. Because we must have the freedoms that otherwise our dead are mocked in all of these wars.
Mm-hmm.
We simply cannot be enslaved to something that is dictatorial upon us. These are the things that we have received from our Hellenic-based culture, and we must fight for them if necessary.
I think you're right. And I want to thank you for having the presence to bring this whole debate to a clarity for my listeners. And the facts are very, very self-explanatory, I think, Michelle. You know, I am a free speech advocate in the extreme, and my whole fight here is to save the constitutional guarantees that my government provided me in its inception that have been so terribly stolen from me and my countrymen. And I want to let you know that I am very proud to have had you on the show, and that we will be working together to try to get more of this truth out in the future. And I want to thank you for being a participant on the French Connection, as many great people have done in the past and will continue to do, I hope.
Well, I'm very proud to know that you exist and that your listeners are such free thinkers that they are willing to listen.
Well,
thank you very much indeed.
Thanks, Michelle. All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You know, Eric, Eric Hufschmidt and I have put together these interviews so that you can be educated on where we are in the world. It is a very, very, very late hour, ladies and gentlemen. We are being assaulted from every quarter from these enemies, and they are not going to stop until they have us at heel. And I got to tell you, this free speech issue is probably the most important of all. Look, when we fight these fights, guys, when we look at the facts around David Irving's situation or the changing of the Palestinians into enemies of mankind rather than the victims they really are, or the facts that you know, the crypto-Judaism that is running rampant across our nation in leadership positions, or all of these other deceptions, it is contingent upon their ability to continue these frauds. And unless we wake up, they're going to be able to win this battle of truth. It's going to be their lie that becomes the truth and our truth that becomes the lie. So I ask each one of you, to carry this message forward, to fight the big fight, and to join us here. This is the place where the truth is being shared around the world. There are tens of thousands of people who need to hear this. There's only 10,000 that are hearing it. It needs to be expanded. Go to your willing people around you and show them these facts and let them read them for themselves and let them become aware of how late an hour it really is for each and every one of us. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank you for listening to The French Connection, and we will be back with you next week with more installments to try to bring this truth further down the field. And
remember that we are the majority.
We are. Thanks, Michelle. Thank you. And I will be talking to you guys next week.